are coming from all over the world, which is lovely. And I think what George said about us, that our practice is enough, in essence, I think it is. And the more of us that are doing these practices all over the world or anywhere really, but the more of us that are practicing and trying to deepen and liberate our hearts and just be, really good, kind people on the planet, the better we all are. So I join that sentiment wholeheartedly. And I'm really happy to see all of you joining for a topic that could seem maybe a little boring, honestly, breath. But the reason that I described it in the way I did in the title is because breath is just more than is a lot more than something that's flat. It's very multidimensional. It means a lot of different things. We interpret it for ourselves, but it's sort of the bridge, the unseen bridge between the body, heart, and mind, and it's energetic. So, hey George, can you take me off spotlight? I'd rather see you guys. So I am always really excited to teach something or, just share some of my experiences about breath because it is so multidimensional and it is so rich. So we'll do a practice, about 30 minutes, and then I'll frame what the practice was about. So it's almost like parenthetical teaching, if you know what that is. So we'll do a practice, and then I'll tell you a little bit about why I chose this particular practice. And actually, the way I'm going to bring this together in practice form is I'll guide you, and then I'll let you glide, hopefully. And then I'll guide you a little bit more, and then I'll let you glide. So I want to give you enough time to be able to experience a couple of different types of breath for yourself, and then we can talk about that. So yeah, I think that's it. One of the things I want to sort of stress before we start is that the posture or the shape of your body that you take is very much, could very much be prescribed to how you're doing right now. So you choose the posture, the shape, the form that you're in according to the time of day, what your current physical experience is, how much sleep you might have gotten, if you've just eaten, etc. The idea is to choose a form or a shape of the physical body that supports inner dignity and clarity and yet is relaxed. And so there's that oxymoron, really, which isn't, but relaxed alertness. So you can stay seated, you can stand, you can also choose to lie down. So let me give you a moment just to rearrange your form in a way that is comfortable for you. And we always have the choice, individual choice at any given time, whether we're going to have our eyes cast down with a very soft gaze or fully close our eyes. So you choose what's best for you now. And in order to experience the breath as fully as possible, I think it's very helpful to feel the weight of your body so that you're sort of dropping down and into the body. Feel the heaviest areas of your body. Or just connect to gravity. So weight and gravity draw us and keep us on the earth. So we can begin by trying to make that connection, the earthly, physical, ground connection. And when we sense weight in our body, there is the opportunity for the muscles and the soft tissue of the body to relax, not feel responsible to hold anything up. So we establish ourselves here, wherever we are, on this earth, wherever that might be, and in the body, however you wish to sense it. And as if we had these little invisible tentacles that stem out of us, see if you can sense the space that you're in. So it's not about looking or even knowing what it might look like, but see if you can sense the space around you. So here we are, each of us individually, in a space of some kind, or maybe outside. And rather than just going into ourselves and our bodies, our minds, our hearts, get a sense of where you are in your space. Some of the things that we notice most obviously is the temperature of the air. And the air is contained in the space. So we feel that on our skin. We feel that entering and leaving our nostrils. Just the air within the space that we're in. And we also notice the light coming in through windows or lamps, and it comes in through the eyelids. So we have space and air and light. Do we all share that in different ways, in different places, and through unique experiences that we each have? And within the space, and because we sense the air, we can notice it a little bit more coming and going through the nostrils. Put a little emphasis there. Notice the temperature, the cadence, whatever you can about the air coming in from the space to your body, just moving very lightly in and out, almost like it's brushing, like a breeze. Soft and gentle. And as you become more comfortable with the breath moving in and out through the nostrils, see if you can breathe in a little bit more deeply. Not with effort, but just through intention. So you bring the breath in a little bit further into your body. As if you're opening windows and just letting that breeze come in a little more deeply. Very light direction. And slow it down if you can, without much effort. So that this breeze or this wind or this breath or this prana or chi or lung is a little bit slower, very, very soft. And it comes in a little bit further into your body, as deeply as you can bring it or would like to. And then notice it as it leaves, very softly, possibly elongated if you can. So we're slowing the rhythm of the breath down purposely, but with a lot of kindness, not force, but just guiding it. If you'd like to, at the end of your next exhale, pause for a moment. Pause and allow the breath, the energy, the chi, the prana, however you would like to meet it and greet it, to be more fully absorbed. So there's a slight retention, but without any muscular tension. So retention that's soft. It's almost like you're holding a bubble. So breathe in and pause. This pause can be as long or short as you like. Just be conscious about it. And then, if you'd like to, do the same thing after you exhale. So you exhale as fully as is comfortable for you. There's no timing, no right way. And then you pause again and allow this to be a quiet rest if you can. Just a very silent, quiet rest, not doing anything. So long, slow, tender inhale, and then a pause. Long, slow, soft exhale, and then another pause. So we're paying closer attention to the four distinct qualities of breath. Bringing in as much space to the internal body as possible. Releasing, letting go, and then bringing in more space. If you'd like to, you can continue this long, slow breath. Or you can step back and just notice how your breath is naturally, how it expresses itself after intentionally breathing in that way. Or you can experiment a little further and imagine that this stream of breath that you're bringing in, this breeze or this wind, can go to a particular place in your body, heart, mind, really. So you're directing it as if you would direct a stream or a river to an area of yourself that you'd like to refresh or relax or soften or renew. Where would you like to bring in a little bit more space, a little bit more softness? And you can do this with the same four-part emphasis. An inhale, slow and long, a pause to retain and absorb all the nutrients of prana, of chi, of lung. A long, slow, lingering exhale, and then a very quiet, relaxed rest. But in a particular area, if you'd like. in these last couple of minutes practicing together, if you'd like to, just step back and notice how the breath expresses itself wherever and however it would like to. Moving in and out, bringing air, carrying space, being connection between all of us. Part of this universal living being that we all belong to. So gradually collect your attention in your heart or the area of your heart. And if you'd like to, in any way that's organic for you, share the practices or the practice with all sentient beings, everywhere, seen and unseen. Share as freely and widely as you would like to. And then allow your eyes to slowly open. Keep your gaze as soft as you can. Now you're looking out at the screen, at all of us. And again, it might appear to be a little flat, these little rectangles of people in them. And see if you can appreciate that every single rectangle has a really incredible heart mind in it. And we're all gathered, through technology all over the world to practice together. So there's so much sweetness here, and unity, really, because we're gathered with, similar heart minds. So if we look out with our eyes soft and kind, then I think we can appreciate each of us that's here. So you might want to look around just for a second. Okay. Well, thank you for your practice, however that was. I think it's really good to remember that even if it wasn't, the best practice you ever had or what you would wish it to be, you're still practicing. So we want to really appreciate that in ourselves. And we're coming together to free our hearts, I think. And this area of breath, let's say, can hold some very energetic dimension if we meet it like that. If, any of us that have dipped into or have practiced and studied Dharma for a while, we know that how important our perspective is. How do we meet and hold or meet and greet whatever our current experience is? This is where we have choice. We have choice about what the experience is necessarily, but we always have choice how we're going to greet it. And so this is the same with everything. And I think it's really helpful and can even be very freeing to apply this perspective to breath. If we're meaning breath as just this kind of flat, boring thing that moves in and out, which we can. Sometimes it seems a little boring. And we greet it with a different perspective, like, oh, wow, there's so many dimensions to a breath, and there's so many ways we can both concentrate on it and utilize it. Help our nervous system, help our hearts, help our open our minds, etc. It's completely how we meet it. So the idea of breath, if we're practicing with the idea of breath being one way, it's flat and boring. And that's just a view. That's just a particular perspective that we've garnered from who knows where. But if we're really sensing it, which is part of why we want to be embodied, because we sense things, if we sense, it's almost magical. I mean, I don't want to take it too far into territory that's not Dharma, but it can, it so many of the teachers that I've worked with, studied with, practiced with, and have gotten to know really well, the breath is much more than this concentrated effort, very tight effort of concentration. Now, we might want to start with a more narrow place to concentrate the breath or to sense the concentration of breath somewhere. And that's to train the mind. That's so that we can become more mindful. So we have an anchor of breath somewhere, and when we wander, we bring it back. And that's what the anchor is for. But an anchor can be anywhere. Anywhere. And so in the practice, we started out with a breath practice, really. So we're slowing the breath down and really paying more exquisite, hopefully, attention to the four aspects or the four facets of breath. And we hopefully you could sense how you were bringing the breath into your body from this huge space that we are in. Space is not contained in walls. Air can be contained within walls, but space is infinite. And so we sense the space, we sense the air, we bring it in, and it might have had a different tone or a different feeling, or you might have greeted it differently. That's the intention. And the breath coming in from the space through the air can also create a lot of inner space. And that's wonderful when we feel that. Because the opposite is clinging. Essentially, it's getting contracted and tight and thinking only one way, or getting caught in our stream of thinking, our habits, our conditions, our fixed views. And that we know is uncomfortable and not productive at all. And so, if we open our minds, heart minds up to breath in different ways, I think that can really free up a lot of space. And then we feel that. Excuse me. And feeling that is the direct experience that we want of everything. The body senses, the body feels, it's not thinking. Not thinking is difficult for a lot of us, you know, myself included. But there's a space that we can inhabit that is below thought. You know, maybe it happens in a few minutes, maybe it takes a retreat, who knows? But the area of our awareness that is before thoughts are formed is very quiet. It's completely connected. It's where we can sense love. It's where we can feel free. It's before the thoughts and habits of mind are formed. Now, again, this isn't necessarily an easy place to just drop into, but it can be cultivated. And that's the good news. That's the really good news. The habit of thinking is quite deep for all of us. And thinking is formulating words, as we know, around an experience. It's naming it, which usually comes with judging it, which usually comes into the patterns of it and ends up pretty much in the same places over and over again. So, you know, our conditioning is like, we know this from plasticity, neuroscience. It's the conditioning is like a groove in the brain. And it's very easy to fall into. It's very easy to repeat. And because we repeat it, it gets deeper. It gets a lot deeper. So we want to skip that groove as much as we can. It's like if you're not walking on a path over and over again, then the grass will slowly grow up and cover it over a lot, maybe not completely. So this is our intention is how can we, I think our intention, my intention is how can we rearrange our conditioning and change the perspective and the conditioning to something that's more beneficial, more heartfelt, more helpful, more healthy, as it said in the suttas, more wholesome, however you want to think of it, but not damaging, not clinging, not harming. Non-harming. The breath, I think, is a really beautiful vehicle to shift harm to not harming. Mainly because it's really soft. You know, if we think about clinging, attachment or aversion, which is the cause of our discomfort, our stress, our suffering. There's a lot of effort in it. There's a lot of either pushing away something that we don't want or holding on to something that we don't want to let go of. Think of the effort in that. Was a teacher named Uchiyami Roshi that wrote a book called Opening the Hand of Thought. And the essence, as I take it from that book, is that the mind is like can be like a clenched fist. You know, I mean, I think everybody's experienced that in one way or another. And if we allow the mind, the heart, excuse me, the hand of the mind, essentially, to open, then it lets go. And so we can use that metaphor of a clenched fist. We feel that in the mind sometimes, like, I've been thinking so much, I feel like I'm a lemon that's being squeezed, you know, or I've been concerned about something or, you know, reiterating it. Over and over and over again, and it's not helpful to the heart. It's like a clenched fist. So clinging is like a clenched fist. How do we release it? There are a lot of ways to do that. But for today, I wanted to bring in how we can do that with the breath, because the breath is so soft, or it can be, maybe not initially for everyone. Seriously, not everybody's going to feel the breath is soft and enjoyable or dimensional. Or that you can move it in one place or another. But you can, and because it's again, it's cultivated. We need to open our view about breath to allow our minds to think differently, our hearts to feel more open, and our bodies to help free us. And we can do this. It just might take a little time, right? Everybody's different in our histories and our wiring, our experiences, and how we meet things. There's a phenomenal Theravadin teacher, Ajahn Suchito, that some of you might be familiar with. And he's one of the only teachers that really openly talks about, or he's very somatic, first of all, and he speaks about energy and breath and prana and chi and lung very openly, very freely. And all the monastics that I know in the Theravadin tradition feel this or sense this or know this in one way or another. It's just that he really openly shares it in a way that I think we can understand and connect with. So if you're curious about this way of connecting or perceiving or even sensing breath, he's got a lot of really excellent books, and I wanted to, and talks, and recordings and everything. So I want to quote a little bit from him because I think it's very helpful for us to hear this something similar in a different voice, right? So he talks about, and this is a book of his that's called Breathing Like a Buddha. And you can get it on a, it's PDF form, it's freely offered. You can donate if you like. It talks about prana, which we might be a familiar term. It's a Sanskrit term for breath and energy. And panya, and or sorry, pana. And pana is the Pali word for breath energy. And so he is talking about this. He says the physical action of breathing in and out moves prana through the body, wherein it acts upon the body's energy system, Kaya Sankara, in a benevolent and liberating way. A benevolent and liberating way. This is because breathing, as an energetic process, connects directly to the nervous system and through that to mental energy, emotions, and subtler aspects of awareness. It also acts as the channel for spiritual intelligence to come forth and moderate the short-term perspectives and willfulness of the secular materialistic mindset. The secular materialistic mindset. I mean, who doesn't have that once in a while, at least? So we're all kind of guilty of that, I think. But what I find really fascinating, and I've experienced, is how the breath is energy, is part of the nervous system, or connects to the nervous system, however you want to think of it. I mean, who knows what's really right in this way. But it moves energy through the system. Now, prana is different from prana. Usually, prana practices are with holds, they're very directed, and they're also sometimes timed, and there's a little bit more effort involved in them. In prana, there's not that effort, there's intention. So it's a very soft, gentle guidance. So on, it comes from anapanasati, one breath at a time. So there's a little bit of a distinction, actually, it's a pretty good distinction between pranayama and anapanasati. And you might know that anapanasati is taught and can be practiced in lots of different ways. It's not tightly just looking at the breath or sensing the breath. It's very freeing once we can dive into it. So that's hopefully what we all experience eventually, because it's quite blissful. It's very quiet. It's very soothing. So that very first breath practice that I led us through is a four-part breath, but it wasn't with timing of any sort. It was to allow you to do it in a way that felt really comfortable. If it didn't happen today, I hope that you'll try it again. Because like anything, it's a practice. And sometimes we need to do it a few times. But when we're not tightly controlling the breath, and there's a lot of reasons why we do put effort into breathing, and I did that kind of practice for years before I started meditating, actually. When we allow it to lead us, so we're leading the breath, but the breath is leading us at the same time, it's this wonderful mutual relationship of heart, mind, and body, I think. And so the four-part breath is slowing the breath down. And we're concentrating, softly concentrating. So it's not a tight concentration, but there's concentration in it on these four distinct qualities of breath. What does the inhale feel like? Pause after. What does it feel like to hold the breath, almost like a bubble? To be very soft around this breath. And then exhale, and it has its own qualities and sensations. And then what does that feel like? And then what does it feel like to not do anything? It's this, can be an incredible pause of silence. And that's really restful for the nervous system. And so breath practices that slow the breath down, and there's lots of them, are affecting the central nervous system, the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system. That's, the physiological aspect of it. But what is it doing for our mind and heart and our bodies? We can sense that. It opens, it connects, it releases, it relaxes the system. And if you can relax your body, your heart mind will automatically relax. If there's tension in your body, there's going to be a little tension in your heart and mind. That's just how it goes. So it's not like seek and destroy necessarily. It's not that tight. But the more we can relax and soften our bodies, both externally and internally, the more the mind opens and the heart is more free. So it's from the physical body to the energetic body to the heart mind. Sometimes it works in the opposite direction. When your mind and or your heart opens up, you feel your body completely relax. Yeah. It's really nice. But generally speaking, it's the body that has to start it. So Ajahn Suchito, in the same book, Breathing Like a Buddha, he describes the what he calls the layers of experience. It's sort of like what I was trying to describe as facets of the breath, or areas or different aspects of breath. He says that describing layers of experience in which the embodied layer comes first, then as one steadies and calms that, the layers of mental formation and mind can be viewed and cultivated rather as one might through unblocking and calming the erratic flow of a stream, discern and calm the underlying currents, and see the bed of that stream. So, with the calming of the bodily energy, the mental dynamics of mood, attitude, and physiological conditioning can be seen and dealt with in the same embodied frame of reference. This is because at an energetic level, body and mind are codependent. Calming the body, one calms the mind. Stressing the mind, one stresses the body. And personally, this has become sort of my tagline in a way. I have spent, actually, it's more than 30 years, it's 45 now. Just trying to, be in my body and then understand the fruits of that, or relish the fruits of that, and then teach it, out of direct experience. And I really know the value of being embodied. There's a lot of talk, well, your body holds wisdom. I am the type of person that would say early on, well, how do I find that? I would never be like, oh, okay. I didn't get it at first. I had to be, I actually had to do a lot of retreat to find it myself. But we can be led to it. we can be guided into it. And that's why I think we practice together, is to try out something a little different, you know, learn something new. So the wisdom of the body really is in, it can be thought about for sure, and it can be analyzed, of course, but it really lies in the silence. In the energetic, what Ajahn Suchito referenced as the bed of the stream. So again, it's the area of the energetic body, of the conscious body, consciousness is energetic, that is below thoughts, below forming of words. It's wordless. And the body is wordless. I mean, it has sensations that we can name, and that's how we start. Prickly, cold, heat, or cool, or hot, or stabbing, you know, whatever it is. But then we want to let those words go eventually. Because the minute we form words about experience, we're caught. There's a perspective. It comes with conditioning, or we'll start new conditioning. In other words, there are a lot of opinions and views that come about from forming words around an experience. Now, we have to try to form words around an experience if we want to share it. And that's what teaching is about. But we're forming words to guide to the formless, I think. You know, and so that we can take each other to different places of awareness or consciousness that we all have, but interestingly, is expressed differently in each of us. So I recently taught something that I called, there's no one way. There's no right way and there's no wrong way as long as it's not harmful, right? So it's not a free for all. We carry our ethics, our principles, the precepts, et cetera, hopefully in our lives so that we're non-harming. So as long as it's non-harming, a non-harming practice, let's just take a breath practice, for instance, there's no one way to do it. And this is why I was so attracted to Anapanasati and the way the Theravadins and especially the forest monastery monks teach. They never said this directly, but after being with them for 35, 40 years, it rubs off. It sinks in eventually. And so we want to be as relaxed about practice as possible, even if it's a concentration practice. We can be concentrated and the body is soft. We can be concentrated, which I think probably many of you have tasted or experienced, and be completely open. Almost like we're sensing the breath move through every pore, that we become formless. The body is no longer an issue. It's no longer feeling solid. It's permeable. It's infinite. Some of you might have experienced that. So that was the reason I guided you into that first practice. But then the second aspect of it was being able to take your breath anywhere you want in your body, because you can. And some of you, I hope, experience that. And this is the kind of territory that I'm going to be exploring in this series that I'm doing that George mentioned. And I'll tell you a little more about that at the end. But we want to be able to move breath, which essentially is energy, anywhere in our body, and it has an effect. So we can use it for different reasons at different times. It could be soothing the nervous system. It could be relaxing a part of the body that might be tight, that might not be well. Relax the heart that might be feeling bitter or resentful. You know, it has all sorts of variations. But we need to play with it, experiment with it so that it becomes ours. And that, you can't tell anybody how to do that. That's the direct experience. That's what the Buddha taught us to gain confidence through, was our own direct experience. George, I completely lost track of time. We're going until 11:30, I mean 12:30. To half past the hour. Okay. So I'm going to stop. Sorry, I have a neurodiverse mind that can't hold on to numbers or time very well. So apologies for the Q&A not being as long as I wanted it to be, actually. But let me just stop there. I think I've said enough. And I'd love to hear from you. So please raise your fake hand, your Zoom hand, if you want to come on and ask a question. I'm just looking at the chat for a second, and I see, oh, there was a question about the book. It's called Breathing Like a Buddha by Ajahn Suchito, and his name is Suchitto. He's British. He lives in outside of London, in a monastery, and I'm forgetting the name of it. This is what it's like to get older.
Maravati.
No, he's in the other one, Chithurst.
Chithurst.
Ajahn Amaro is in Amaravati. Yeah, so, and he teaches quite a bit. So, Susan, hi, you want to come on and
Yes,
add your
hi.
detail? Hi.
Earlier this year, I took your course, Anxiety, It's Not All in Your
Oh.
Mind, and it was really wonderful. It does sound
Thank
like
you.
the course that you will be teaching is not. Wouldn't be a repeat, the new one you're going to be teaching.
Well, it's a repeat with a theme because the theme is embodiment and the subtle body, right? I didn't get so much into the subtle body in the anxiety course. Yeah, that wasn't the right place to indulge in that. And it was, really about hopefully sharing practices that could soothe or alleviate the strength of anxiety. I don't think essentially we can erase it completely, but we can certainly make it a little bit calmer. We can feel it as it comes and maybe try to do something about it. We can relax afterwards. So it was very specific about anxiety. So this course that I'm going to be doing is not specific about anxiety, but you could apply parts of it to anxiety, of course.
Okay,
So
thank
hopefully
you.
it'll be a lot wider.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. How was your experience of it? Victoria, hi. Before I go into that.
Well, this was perfect actually, because I just before this I did a Feldenkrais class on breathing. So
Oh, yeah, kind of similar, right?
my breathing day. First of all, what was the name of the Roshi who talked about unclenching the mind?
Uchiyami Roshi.
Ushiyama.
Uchiyami. Uchiyami Roshi. It's called Releasing the Hand of Thought.
Okay, Uchiyami Roshi.
Roshi. Yeah, there's an interesting article on the book in an old version of Tricycle. So if you subscribe to Tricycle, you could look it up. And the book is available.
Okay, thanks.
He's a Zen teacher, obviously.
Right. I really appreciated this. I'm still struggling, and the same thing was my experience. I've trying different modalities for working on breathing.
Yeah.
I've been holding my breath my whole life, basically, due to trauma, and I didn't even know that until I started doing therapy. I mean, receiving therapy,
Right.
therapist,
Good.
and finding out about the causes of and the hypervigilance that I've just had this hypervigilance, like at any second
Sure.
something could jump out and eat me. So
Yeah.
the reptilian brain, which we were supposed to have evolved beyond, is alive and well in my system. I'm not sure what my question is, except that it seems that no matter what modality I try or how I try to practice, it's like I'm hitting a block all the time. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well, probably, yeah, I mean, for good reason, although the block can fall down because the you're protecting yourself and you've created, there have been these experience that have created these conditions that, maybe aren't so useful anymore. And I think there are different ways to enter into the body and relax it and meet the experiences, but I think you have to do that. I mean, it's my feeling. I've taught a lot of people with trauma and even in hospitals, that it has to be very gentle, very slow, and with someone else that you trust. There are a lot of different ways to work through breath as an energetic sense to release places, but I would say, in my experience, I think you should honor, or you could honor the walls, the blockades, however it is, honor them because they've kept you feeling a little more safe, and that nothing is permanent. And so when we're working with any conditioning, we want to remind ourselves of that. Trauma is very, very, very deep, and we want to respect why it's there, or why we've built up the coping mechanisms that we have, and just be understanding and as kind and gentle about that as possible. And I think also moving into any experience that's uncomfortable through the body is actually, I think, better than talking about it. And or you parallel it. I mean, it's both together. You want to talk, but you also want to release the body, because if memory and memory is held in tissue. And so if we don't include the body in our practices, we're not going to be fully free. And the Buddha talked about that all the time, all the time. But I think it's best to do it with someone, with some guidance, someone that's really kind and gentle and has, done this kind of work before. So, yeah, just respect that it's hard. It's hard for, very good reasons, and it will can also change, let's say.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Would anybody like to share an experience of the practice, possibly? Because I think it's interesting to hear, it's one practice that we started with, at least. And if we got into a conversation and everybody was sharing, or some of you were sharing, we would recognize how it expresses itself differently in each of us, which is fantastic, I think. That's why I really don't think there's one way to experience anything, and it's certainly not one way to practice anything. So, anybody up for sharing? Yeah, John, come on on. And then Melanie, I see your hand. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm having trouble finding
The hand.
the symbol. But when I first started doing the breath pause, the inhale, and then after an exhale,
Yeah.
some part of me wanted to make those pauses longer. And then I
Okay.
found I had to breathe a number of natural breaths between a four-part breath cycle. And
Okay.
finally, I just paused briefly
Yeah.
enough to really be aware of what that felt like in
Yeah.
a quick way. And then also the breath suspension, which I have done breath suspension as a practice,
Yeah.
but not the inhale. It's just like the total letting go part, not the holding part.
Yeah,
But it
yeah,
was
yeah.
very interesting. And once I got a hold of it, I was probably toward the end of the time
Yeah,
period. It
it
took
takes
me
a
a
while.
while to get
Yeah.
that. It was really kind of, I liked it.
That's great. I mean, I think, because I've been teaching a lot of people this for a really long time, I've seen that we have a preference. We either like to inhale, or we like to exhale, or we like to hold the full pause, or we like the empty pause. Everybody's a little different. And so I think what you did, your approach to it was just let it be a little shorter and more natural. And what happens over time is that it will grow. So you'll be able to breathe more and more slowly as you do this. And it was Choki Nyima Rinpoche said, if you can control the breath, you can control the mind. And all forms of spiritual practice, at least Buddhist practice, well, even the Indian tantric system, really recognize the importance of regulating breath when you want to, because you're really regulating your mind or your heart mind, let's say. So take it slowly. And the more you do it, the longer the breath will be until you're not breathing like 20 breaths per minute. You're breathing like 5. And think of the rest that the nervous system enjoys. So it builds over time. It cannot be rushed, I don't think, at least in this type of practice experience. So that's great. Thank you. Melanie, you want to hop on?
Sure. Hi. Yeah, that was wonderful. I just really liked the pausing. It gave,
yeah.
It was more interesting than just breathing. Because I had to pay attention to what I was doing. So that was more interesting. And I really liked the pause and the end, the exhale. There was a calm there. I said, oh, this is really nice. I like this. I want to stay here.
Yeah.
And a question that I had, you know, just talking before, I use the breath a lot. I when I'm anxious, I go to the breath. It's a real refuge for me. And I find even if I can't catch the breath, I'll say, breathing in, breathing out.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Yeah.
I'm thinking, is it more, it's more calming to slow the breath down? Should I have an intention of more of slowing the breath down when I'm anxious rather than just doing some kind of breathing? You know, I don't really pay attention to.
Yeah, the slowing has been researched and shown on fMRIs, et cetera, to calm the nervous system, to calm the mind. That's what's soothing, is the slower pace. Because think when you're anxious or fearful, you hold your breath. Anxious, your breath is all over the place, you know, it's rapid. Or just, you know, too much discursive feeling, thinking, excuse me, it's like the breath is high and it's, you know, kind of erratic. So when we're slowing the breath, we're toning the nervous system at the same time. So that's what I would just try that. And the more we do that, I mean, I practice this kind of thing every day because my nervous system is quite sensitive and I need that. So, you know, the more you do it, the more you embody it and the quicker it'll come when you need it. That's the thing about practice. You know, we don't want to just practice and leave the practice wherever we were sitting or standing or lying down. We want to be able to have it available to us as we're, you know, in the world. So we condition ourselves through practice. So that will decondition some of the holding of your breath after a while. So we notice our conditioning and we can decondition. And there's actually a really interesting commentary on that in Access to Insight by Tanisaro Bhikkhu, if you wanted to look at it. It's called Deconditioning the Mind, I think. So this is what the Buddha taught us, is that we have these conditions and conditioning. We all do. Well, let's notice them. Let's decondition them. And there are so many ways to decondition the mind, the body, the heart. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
There's an interesting aspect to the pause after the exhale that I just want to mention that can teach us about fear. And this will be part of what I'm going to be teaching in the course. So when we're pausing and not breathing at all, just, you know, trying to rest, your mind will say, oh my God, get me out of here. I need to breathe. I'm going to die or something like that. You know, I mean, it can be exaggerated and extreme. But your body says, you know what? No, I'm okay. I'm actually okay. It's fine. And if we can learn to listen to the body, I found in that small little aspect of that four-part breathing, that we can override fear. Then we're not constantly victimized by fear, because usually fear is about something almost always, that hasn't happened yet. So if you want to play around with that as an aspect of the pause after the exhale, see if you can sense your body and what your mind is saying. They're very distinct in this case. Eventually, they'll be together. But at first, it might be like raising the flag, like, oh no, this is not good for me. And the body's like, okay, that's fine. So see if you can discern that. I think it's pretty wild. Sherry, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my question. So you said that the breath initially, it is a concentrated effort. And I find from years of movement, Pilates, yoga, you know, runner back in the day, and still I do a lot of movement, you know, it has to do with the breath. And so that transition of not being concentrated, because if you ask me to do something, I can do it, to have it be more open, you know, like almost outside the body. This is where I get stuck.
Even sure.
You had so many different practices,
I know.
Techniques. Okay, 4, 7, 8, got it. Okay.
And I think right.
It's because of the, you know, the many years of exercise and concentration.
Yes.
My body. Okay.
I felt the same way when I started doing retreat, because I had been practicing yoga for a long time before that and was used to those pranayama practices. It to do nothing with the breath was like, how do I do that? I did not understand. And it really took me a while to let go. Again, we're deconditioning. So you've conditioned that. We condition that in our bodies, especially if we're into exercise or yoga or, you know, anything that formulates the breath in a certain way. That becomes a habit. Very hard to let go of any habit. But look at it as a habit, as not the way, and not the way it always has to be. So you're going to come against your walls again. We'd all do. I mean, part of meditation is doing that. Part of mindfulness is doing that. Part of liberating ourselves is doing that. Hit those walls, see them, feel them, so that you can know, oh, well, that's a perspective. That's my perception. This is a habit. I don't want to continue it. So I'm really, you know, one of my teachers said, you greet your conditioning and you say, hey, how are you? No, thanks, not right now. And you turn away from it. And that over time rearranges it. So be gracious with yourself. And if you have this heart intention to work with the breath as it is and how it can expand and lead you in very beautiful, potentially beautiful ways of being aware, conscious and aware, then I think eventually you will be able to.
Oh, thank you. And you're having a workshop on
more? It's a series. It's a 4-part series starting on October 10th.
Okay.
And it's up online already on Sangha Life's platform.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Hi, Gail.
Hi. That was lovely. And you briefly mentioned how the body isn't solid. And I think I learned from Judith Blackstone. I don't know if you know who she is.
Oh, anyway. I know of her. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I'm meditating and today, I spend a lot of time dissolving my body, just working on just dissolving my body. And it feels so, so good. And I'm not even sure why it feels good or what I'm even doing. But when you mentioned, you know, the pulling apart of the body, I wonder if you could talk just a little bit more about that, because for me, it just is so freeing and feels so nice.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the physical body is not easy to live in. If you make it to aging, then you know that very well. But the physical body, we have so many ideas about the physical body. And one of them is that it's solid. I mean, we have that idea about most things, right? And it's really not. I mean, the basis of the Buddha's teaching is that everything, all conditioned phenomenon, is impermanent. Now, we can understand that in different ways. We can intellectualize it, but we can also sense it. And so if we sense it, like, you know, dissolving and coming back, you know, the permeability of the body, for instance, especially through breath, I think the breath is one key to recognizing the permeability of the body, that it's just a shape, a configuration that we've put a lot of thought into. Well, what if we're not thinking about it? We're just sensing it. And that's why you can literally feel your whole body breathing. I think it was just kind of what you're describing, eventually. And that's so liberating. Because, and also the Buddha, who was in a great deal of physical pain in his back before he died, someone asked him how he dealt with it. And he said, the only time he didn't feel pain was in deep concentration, absorption. And when you're absorbed, deeply concentrated, absorbed, you don't feel your body.
That's right.
It's like, oh, and that's part of how I've managed chronic pain for so long. So, you know, there's different ways we can approach it, but I think the essence of it is that our ideas about things really hold us back. So that's where resting in the place, trying to find, and, you know, that's part of what I'm going to hopefully do a little more in the course, but trying to find that area of consciousness that we all have before words are formed is in the body. The body's not talking words. It has its own language, which is wordless. And so that's the place that I think you find when you dissolve.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so blissful.
Yeah. You know, I'm a potter. And when I get involved in that, I don't feel hunger. I don't feel tired. And then when I wrap everything up, it all just comes flooding back. I'm starving. I'm shaking.
Yeah.
So I guess it's that sort of, you're just in the.
It is like that.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's also, it creates insight, or it offers insight. So it's not you want an experience and the insight isn't derived from it. So the wisdom and the insight and even the compassion or kindness that comes from that place is what we want to live, right? So not just forget, but because I'm an artist too, so I know about that kind of zone that we can get into. That's a great place to be, feels wonderful, but are we deriving, you know, are we allowing insight to arise? And that's the difference between insight practice and art, let's say.
Right. That's right.
But
yes.
Artists find that space fairly easily.
Yeah.
That's
thank
great.
That was great. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Well, thank you very much for coming, everybody. I really appreciate it. Margo, I saw you had a question, so how about we address that another time? yeah, really enjoyed being with you today. I hope that something was potentially helpful. And I hope I see you again on some platform. so please take good care. And the course is called Embodied Intelligence, Deep Sensing for Emotional Freedom. And I just want to emphasize what George said in the beginning about Donna. I mean, this is you know, newly understood in our cultures what Donna is. And I think people, especially from Sangha Live and anybody that practices with the monastics, as I'm sure some of you do, we understand the exchange of generosity to be very, very deep and transforming. And also, it really helps us to keep things going, pay rent, pay people, buy food. You know, there's all those essentials. So in modern life, as non-monastics, we need the financial support. So whatever you can do is incredibly appreciated. So I hope I see you again. Thank you very much.